Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears along with you here Tuesday, April the 27th, 2021. 18 coming up on 19 minutes past the hour. And we have got a great guest this hour who I've wanted to have on for a long time. But let me give you a quick rundown of who's going to be on the program for the remainder of the week. We have got a great week coming up here on WWGH Radio. Next hour on this program, we will be joined by the mayor of the city of Marion here, Mayor Scott Schertzer, who will fill us in on all things going on in the local arena. So Mayor Scott Schertzer coming up at 9:10 this morning. Tomorrow on the program, we have got a great day. At 8:10 tomorrow, we are going to be joined by legendary criminal defense attorney for Sam Shepard here in Ohio. He was O.J. Simpson's defense attorney, the legendary F. Lee Bailey, tomorrow morning to discuss a myriad of things going on in the world, current events, politics, social issues. F. Lee Bailey tomorrow morning at 8:10 a.m. live. And then tomorrow morning at 9:10 a.m., we have got a favorite coming back to this program, one of our great return guests who has not been on since Election Day, and he will tell you why tomorrow, but I'm going to tell you, we have had requests for this guy, and he just had his 95th birthday. The legendary Shecky Green, comedian from the Ed Sullivan Show and Groucho Marx and so many other things. Shecky Green, who just turned 95 last week, will be back with us tomorrow morning, 9:10 a.m. live, and he'll tell us why he hasn't been on since Election Day 2020, and it's going to be a very interesting story. I heard it last night, and you'll hear it tomorrow morning. And then Thursday morning at 8:10 a.m., we're going to be joined by legendary ABC newsman Sam Donaldson to fill us in on Joe Biden's first 100 days and also anything in the news that happens between now and then. So what a great week coming up here on WWGH Radio. And we kick it off today, as I say, with a guest who I have wanted to have on for a long time. He is the first African-American student admitted to the racially segregated University of Mississippi in 1962. We're going to hear this story. This was a big flashpoint in the early 1960s for what was going on in the world at that time, and see what's been up with him since then. What a pleasure it is to welcome to these microphones James Meredith. Mr. Meredith, how are you?
Still here, thank you.
I'm glad to hear it. Mr. Meredith, I want to start here in the beginning. Tell us about your childhood. Where did you grow up? What was it like?
Wow. I grew up in central Mississippi, in the Hill section of Mississippi. And my childhood was extremely interesting. I was raised by my mother to be who I was. And I don't know what else to say.
Did she instill in you a lot of individuality?
Right, and the idea that whatever was wrong with society, it was my job to fix it.
When you were growing up in the 1930s and 1940s, what were the big problems with society that you were faced with then?
Well, generally, what I didn't like was the way that me and my kind was treated. And from the age of at least four, I think maybe three, I had committed myself to changing this world to what it ought to be.
In your mind, at that young age, what should the world have been?
Different from what I saw when I went to Kosciuszko, which was the county seat. We lived in the country, like most folk. But everybody had to go to town to get what they had to get from town. And whenever I went there, that was the only time I ever saw anybody other than my family. When I went to town, whatever it was I saw, I didn't like.
Was it something you felt? Was it a feeling? Was it actual physical words that people used? How did you know?
Quite frankly, I'm like what most people think. My life has been totally privileged. My family, the Pattersons and the Merediths, were the biggest black landowners in the county and as big probably as anywhere. We were very special people, at least that's what I was taught that we were, and had responsibility, which to me meant total. There's never been a day in my life when I didn't think that my job was to make things right.
As time goes on, we come to 1961. The University of Mississippi at that time is considered a racially segregated university. What led you to apply to that university in 1961?
Quite frankly, most people don't know really the most important parts of my life. And it was the 9 years immediately before I came back to Mississippi with a plan to destroy the system of white supremacy. I was in the first desegregation of the military in the world, in the United States Air Force. In 1951, the Air Force was the first to do desegregation. I was in the very first outfit that the government had to do that. And every outfit I was in, I was the first black to desegregate. They didn't call it integration, wasn't in the picture. It was desegregation, not integration, which is two different things most people don't understand the difference. So I spent 9 years, and everybody liked to talk about what happened at Ole Miss. I guarantee you what I experienced in them 9 years in the desegregated military was much worse than anything I ever experienced at Ole Miss.
Tell us about those 9 years.
The very first outfit after basic training that I was assigned to was Forbes Air Force Base, Kansas. And there were a lot of all-black outfits there, and there was a lot of all-white outfits there. And I was assigned to a B-29 outfit, which had just dropped a bomb on Japan to end the war. And when I assigned, reported for duty, the first sergeant assigned me to a room on the second floor of the barracks with a white roommate. When I returned from work that day, not only had my roommate moved, every white on the second floor had moved off. Now, and that was minor compared to the way they treated blacks in Kansas, which I had never experienced in Mississippi what I experienced in 1952 in Kansas.
As you headed back 1961 to Mississippi with this plan to get rid of segregation, what were the ideas behind this plan?
Well, basically, primarily, I know most people haven't heard of it, but W.J. Cash wrote a book in the 1940s, Mind of the South, and it was about how much carrying out the rules of segregation affected whites. The book, the name of the book was Mind of the South, and it talked about how it bothered mentally whites who had to enforce segregation. And so basically, I knew that a large percentage of whites was as much against it as any black. So consequently, that was basically my strategy. And it cost, is worked and is in position to work now. And I hope we're going to talk about that later, because prevention is better than cure.
Absolutely. I definitely want to get to current day, but I just want to touch on this 1961 event. You say it was not the hardest thing that you had ever went through, that the 9 years prior had been harder. Why do you think this is the thing that you're known for, that the pictures were taken, that all the press followed?
Well, I like to think I know. Mississippi is the center of the black-white thing. Mississippi is the epitome of the black-white issue in the world, and particularly in America, but all over the world. So, and frankly, that's the reason for Mississippi, although I'm from Mississippi. Mississippi was the place to change, because when Mississippi changed, the whole world followed suit.
Want to just go through this a little bit before we move to current times. 1961, it is written that JFK inspired you to apply. Is that true?
Absolutely true.
Now, what was it about JFK that did that?
Okay. Politics is politics. JFK, I don't think, had a particular love for blacks. He hadn't thought about it as part of his mission. But you got to remember, they followed Eisenhower. Eisenhower. Okay? Eisenhower had been a military man, and he had brought the troops into Arkansas for the Arkansas Nine. Now, and the Republicans had, as you are aware, because of Lincoln, until Kennedy, 98% of all blacks who voted, all in America, voted Republican. And the Republicans had a small civil rights plank in their platform with Nixon and Eisenhower. Kennedy, John F. Kennedy, had a stronger plank put in the 1960 when he ran for president as a ploy. But he got it in. And basically, I come to know about that. And when he got nominated, I mean not nominated, when he was elected and installed, the day after he installed, I dropped my letter in the mailbox to Ole Miss. So I don't know what else to say.
From 1961 until October 1st, 1962, when those famous pictures are taken of you going to the University of Mississippi, what was going on in that time?
You say that the 10 years, I'm not sure what period you asked about.
From 61, when you decided you were going to apply, until October 1st, 1962, when you did go on campus, those famous pictures that were taken, what was going on in the background while that's all going
okay.
on?
Okay. Basically, now what most people don't know, my father was the principal engineer of how to deal with fighting white supremacy. And the principal thing that happened between that time, actually, when I made that application in January 61, it was then, another 15 months before October of 62 when I went in. The primary thing was propagandizing to keep ignorant, bad white folks from taking the matters into their hands and let the authorities deal with it and keep things under control, so to speak. I mean, more particularly, to keep the, I better leave that alone. I think you got the picture.
October 1st, 1962, as you're going on to campus and all these officers are there, what was that day like for you? You look back on it now, what do you remember about that day?
My mission was over. When I got out of the military, my goal was to put the federal government in position where they would have to use the United States military to support my rights as a citizen. And I pulled that off. You understand, I've heard all my life Jane Meredith crazy, but ain't nobody ever accused him of being stupid. Now, I guarantee you, I would have never come to Ole Miss if them troops hadn't been there first.
Why do you think people have referred to you as crazy?
Because that was a play on words. You understand. This black-white thing has produced all kinds of people, all kinds of scenarios. And actually, crazy meant that this is the black, and they didn't call them black, that you either had to do what they wanted done or kill them. Do you understand that? That's what crazy really meant.
When you were attending the university from 1962 to 1963, what was the atmosphere there like?
I didn't even care. Don't you understand? Mississippi is so smart. 99% of Mississippians don't even know that all them troops, 33,000 troops, was in Mississippi, more than was in Vietnam, more than was in Germany. I mean, but Mississippi is so smart, they have convinced people that that was a riot. That was no riot. That was an insurrection.
For people listening, explain to them what the difference is.
The difference is the only other time the president had issued the initiated the insurrection action was the Civil War. And the midnight of September 30th, John Kennedy invoked the Insurrection Act that enabled him to send the regular military into Mississippi. And believe you me, if I didn't know they had already going to do that, I wouldn't have come here.
When you look back at John Kennedy now, how do you think of him? How do you characterize him?
I characterize him as the Kennedy administration. And I know that the real person that caused things to happen was the Attorney General, who happened to be his brother.
Now, Bobby Kennedy, how do you think of him?
He is the official that basically changed the black-white relationship in the world.
By doing what, in your opinion?
By doing what?
Yeah, well, what did he do that changed that?
Well, he decided that a citizen should enjoy the rights of citizenship.
Want to talk about one more thing before we come to current time, because I think this is going to be interesting. The 1966 March Against Fear, how did this come about?
That was in the planning for at least 10 years. I mean, as I told you, that also was principally my father's thing. Everybody knew, although most people claim they didn't know, it was fear that kept our way of life, the so-called way of life, white supremacy, segregation, and most people know, but nobody will say, segregation was just another name for slavery. As a matter of fact, segregation was worse than slavery. Everybody knew it. That's why the New York Times a couple of years ago started a new thing about 1619, because all that ain't about nothing. I mean, that's a bunch of crap. But the I better shut my mouth. God said, you talk too much and don't do enough work.
Now, Mr. Meredith, in those moments when you decide that you don't want to say anymore, what's running through your head? Why do you not want to say the things?
Because people don't like to hear the truth. The lie is much easier to digest and live with. It's time for us to start dealing with the truth on this black-white race issue, and nobody still is, for the most part.
Well, we're going to come to that after one more question here, because I do want to talk about that in current times. I do want to go back again about in regard to this March Against Fear, 1966. Now, you were shot during this March Against Fear. Take me back to that. What's it like to be shot?
Well, quite frankly, I was a soldier. I still consider myself a soldier for Jesus Christ. I mean, but what soldiers do is kill enemies. Quite frankly, I think I'm old enough to say it now, the most surprised person in the world that I was still living was me. I expected my enemies to kill me because I was at war. And I'm glad that it's come the way it has up to now. But having people, slavery has been around since man been around. And having people work either cheap or free is not a new thing. And it's almost been. You see, the United States started this equality of mankind. France talked about it, but the reason the Statue of Liberty is in the New York Harbor and not in France is because the French never did the equality thing, only the Americans in 1787. You see why I shut my mouth?
Well, it's a very interesting thing, and like I say, before we move to the current times, just what does it feel like to be shot? Is it painful?
Well, I didn't even bother for 40 years to find out who shot me. It was irrelevant. The only thing that mattered to me is that I wasn't dead, which meant I'm still a soldier, still capable of fighting.
So let's come to current times here. This is almost 60 years later now. This all happened in the 1960s. And we have a time now where there are trials, where there are some riots, some protests. And a lot of it started last year in this current cycle with the George Floyd case. When you saw this video of George Floyd with the police officer on his neck, what did you think?
Well, I wrote an op-ed piece for CNN on that exact subject. And the topic, the title of that op-ed speech was James Meredith, I Am George Floyd. But I'm also the Scottsboro Boys. I'm also Trayvon Martin. I'm also every lynching that's taken place. And now he's telling me, shut your mouth again.
Well, in regard to that, for people who don't understand that, what do you mean?
Well, I mean that prevention is better than cure. And I've been knowing this all my life. But I've been scared to say it because people didn't want to do it.
Now,
and I, just like all other human beings, wanted to be liked, even would hope to be loved. So I was scared to say the truth, because I knew people wouldn't want to hear it. Like if we get to it today, the people ain't gonna want to hear this truth about prevention is better than cure.
Well, tell us that truth. Let's get to it right now so we do get to it.
Now, you've already indicated that you had wanted to talk to me before, and I never talked to you before. Now, but it was, I think it was God working that you called me yesterday to be on this program, and I asked you where you were. And you said somewhere in Ohio. Now, I came to Ohio in 84 to the University of Cincinnati, but actually what I really came there for was to study what had happened in the areas that were slave areas that did not dismantle after slavery, like Southern Ohio, Southern Indiana, Missouri, Kentucky, well, not Kentucky, Maryland, and a couple of other places. Because the real problem of the black-white, of the black people today is still the South, but it's primarily cities. Cities of the West, cities of the North, and now cities of the South, because there ain't no difference. But everybody is lying about what the problems are, and I think everybody really know it.
What are the problems?
The breakdown of moral character. And the best example of prevention is better than cure is Columbus, Ohio. The latest, one of the latest, of the many shootings, and if we don't start dealing with reality and the truth, you ain't seen nothing yet. So, now, and what is the latest that I think happened in Ohio? Teenagers were fighting. But I heard with my own ears one of the teenagers say that they was fighting because somebody had come and wanted to do harm to the family, including their mother and the grandmother. Now, nobody wanna hear this, but don't you understand that should have been prevented by the elders? But we got a culture now that don't allow elders to do the job. As a matter of fact, most elders don't know their job anymore. Teaching, training up children in the way they should go. Everybody been to church and heard this, but they think they're not supposed to do it. I better leave that alone, too.
As that was going on, because that was just 45 minutes from here in Columbus, Ohio, that is the Micaiah Bryant shooting, 16 years of age, was the girl. That video was also captured on police video camera. We've all seen it, especially in this area and all across the world. I believe the funeral was yesterday, I believe. When you see that video, what do you think?
I see prevention failing to take place, but don't you understand? It was a rookie police that did the shooting. He also had not been trained by his superior. Otherwise, prevention would never have happened. I mean, the prevention would have happened. And what he did would never have happened.
Well, the big question, Mr. Meredith, that I think a lot of people have in these two cases, George Floyd and what happened here in Columbus, and a lot of other cases as well, is should the police officers have fired in the current atmosphere we have, or should the police officer have been on George Floyd's back for 9 minutes?
Now, I don't know about you, but every Christian listening, if any are, know what Jesus Christ said about when you have a problem, like started that fight. You don't go to the police. You don't go to court. You settle it by using the teachings of good and righteousness.
These cases are all being referred to as issues of racism because the people who were shot were African American. Do you think there is any racism in any of George Floyd, what happened in Columbus, or any other of these cases?
Good sense would never bring me there. I mean, now, prevention is better than cure. I'm going to go back to Ferguson, Missouri. Michael Brown case for many years was big as George Floyd's case. And there's nobody I know that didn't see what Michael Brown did 10 minutes before he got shot. Had nothing to do with him getting shot. But nobody had taught him that he shouldn't steal, that he shouldn't beat up and abuse people. He did all of that. And nobody ever indicated that anybody had a responsibility to teach him right and wrong, good and bad. And every Christian has a responsibility to teach every child right and wrong, good and bad. And I promise God that the rest of my life I'm going to do His will and do that.
We hear the term racism a lot. How do you define it?
You know, not only do I not define it, everybody ever used it to me, I asked them to define it for me, and ain't nobody ever defined it for me, because every definition that anybody ever gave fit me.
I think most people would define it as treating a different race differently because of the color of their
skin. That is total nonsense.
Okay.
Total nonsense. I ain't never treated nobody the same. And nobody else either. I got 10 brothers and sisters. I ain't never treated none of them the same.
When it comes to these cases that we're talking about today, George Floyd and the case in Columbus, how much responsibility for what happened do you put on the people who have died in these cases, and how much responsibility on the police officers? That's a big question.
No. The responsibility belongs to the elders. The Bible says, and I ain't never met a black Christian that didn't know it and couldn't say it, that you should train up a child in the way he should go. And when he is old, he will not depart from it. Now, only thing I see now is people can't do good, they can't do right because they don't know good and they don't know right.
Do you think that these cases would have been any different if there were white people involved in these cases, if it was a white 16-year-old girl, if it was a white George Floyd.
Now, most people don't know that slavery, look, Greece and Rome are known to be the basis of present European civilization. 90% of everybody in Greece and Rome were slaves. And they used to teach that up until recently in our schools. And they stopped. But that didn't change the truth. Now, black slavery, called the peculiar slavery, that's what they called the slavery in the South that they fought the Civil War over. Now, the peculiar slavery means only blacks could be slaves that you could own as property. More than 10% of all of the slaves in South Carolina in 1865 were white. 85% of all the slaves in America before 1700 were white. But everybody pretend like they don't know that.
So in to tie a knot in this particular subject, as we look at these cases and as time goes on, do you think the right thing was done with the police officer Chauvin being convicted?
That was a showcase trial. I guarantee you, as you can already tell, ain't nothing changed and ain't nothing gonna change. I mean, this, I don't know anybody that didn't know that Chauvin was going to get convicted. Don't you understand that whole Minnesota conspired to make sure he was convicted? But don't you understand the Mississippi River start in Minnesota? It ends. Everybody thinking Mississippi, it really don't end in the Mississippi, but everybody think it does. But Mississippi is the butt end of the Mississippi River. But the thing is, this slavery thing is totally misconstrued. I mean, it really has to do with the condition. The, you know, slavery is another name for free labor.
Mr. Meredith, I want to ask you this question because we're running out of time, and I do hope you come back on the program because this is a fascinating conversation. A lot of you were involved in politics and have been involved in politics, worked for politicians, ran for office yourself. A lot of people have very strong feelings one way or another. Ohio went for President Trump in the last presidential election. What is your feeling on the 4 years that has now ended of President Donald Trump? A lot of people would use the racism term in regard to President Trump. You've heard that.
Okay. A lot of people have been fighting over the race issue. Now, I'm going way out on the limb here now. Many people have heard it said that Bill Clinton was the first black president. Nobody has played the race card more than Bill Clinton, because when he played the race card the last time, it got his wife unelected. And everybody who know most anything about politics know that. But now, I think it might have been that CNN article that I surmised that Trump played the race card better than anybody. I thought it was David Duke. But Trump outplayed David Duke, because what Trump did was got the benefit of the white supremacists, and then could deny, they could claim him and he denied them. That's playing the race card better than Clinton did both times, when he played it for himself and when he played it for his wife and she lost.
Do you, and you don't have to answer this if you don't want to, but I'm going to ask, in the election last year, did you feel the man best suited for the job was Trump or Biden for the next 4 years?
I see why you gave me the option to not answer that, because the race card can be played in more ways than one. And I tell you quite frankly, old James Meredith has used and played the race card a whole lot. And I ain't gonna answer no more on that.
In regard to that, are there any specific ways that you have played the race card?
Well, now, the, yes, the, you see, the most, the biggest thing, the most significant 18 months of my life was the 18 months I was on Jesse Helms' staff. Because don't nobody but me know what I did there. He didn't know. Now, I wrote every senator and congressman, all 500, and I wrote every governor in America. And I asked all of the congressmen and all the senators that I wanted to get access to the Library of Congress to study the black race and the slave trade. And most people don't know slavery and slave trade was a complete different thing. And the, only two people did I hear from, Senator Monahan from New York, Senator Helms from North Carolina. Senator Monahan put me on his mailing list, and I never considered me again. Senator Helms had his top lawyer answer me, and he and I, me and the lawyer, had communications, several communications. I told him what I wanted, that I wanted to get to Washington so I could go to the Library of Congress. I'd been all over the world studying, all over Europe, all over Africa, all over Asia, the Far East, the Middle East. And I had discovered that the most records on slavery, the slave trade, and the black race was in the Library of Congress. So I had to go there and get access. And Jesse Helms lawyer, I don't think he even know what we were talking about, me and his lawyer. But his lawyer convinced the senator to bring me on and let me do my study. And they did that. And that's the way I use the race card.
With 30 seconds left to go here, Mr. Meredith, what are your thoughts on former President Barack Obama?
I think he's the smartest president ever been in America, and I think his wife is smarter than him.
Really quickly, what's one of the reasons you think he is the smartest?
Because he went to Columbia, and that's an Ivy League school that people, and that's the same one I went to. I think that's his main thing, was going to Columbia and having the experience with Harlem after California and Hawaii.
Well, I got to tell you, James Meredith, it's been a pleasure to have you on this morning. I know the first time, but I hope you will come back because I found the conversation very enlightening, and I would like to have more conversations like this.
Thank you.
Thank you. Stay well. James Meredith, remember, the first African-American student admitted to the racially segregated University of Mississippi, October 1st, 1962, a civil rights icon, and also was involved in the March Against Fear 1966, for which he was shot during that march. We'll be back with the mayor very shortly.
Let us know when the committee to investigate City Auditor Robert Landon will be chosen and what they will be